G'day and welcome to Roaming with Lil. My name is Lil Deverell. I'm an orientation and mobility specialist based in Melbourne. I'm interested in anything to do with functional vision, orientation and mobility, and the research that helps us to do our job better. In offering orientation and mobility services to people with low vision or blindness, we have the privilege of hearing other people's stories. From initial assessment, we need to listen deeply to understand what matters to the client so that we can tailor our services to meet each client's unique needs. This can be a sensitive process, and it is so important to be aware of our own agendas that influence how we hear and hold another person's story. Then there are relationships at the office that call for a similar sensitivity and self-awareness. Today I'm talking with Peter Bentley about ways of doing the inner work needed to facilitate good reflective practice and build a healthy workplace community. Peter, tell me a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in a couple of cultural situations, being brought up in Queensland originally and then moved to New Guinea with my parents and spent several early teenage years in New Guinea. When I left school, did an apprenticeship in fitting and turning, trained as an engineer, then taught engineering at Swinburne. I went into an Anglican church ministry up in Darwin, which took me to another cultural context, working both within the Darwin context and also engaging with Indigenous communities, visiting Indigenous inmates in local prisons and getting a sense of the issues there. Then I became a Baptist minister in the early 90s. As I was working in a small Baptist community here in Melbourne, became aware of the fact that people were struggling with issues in their everyday life experience that weren't being addressed by just the theological or the broader teaching elements in the church. My supervisor suggested I talk to a lady who was setting up a program in what was called spiritual direction. And so I met with Jill Manton, who was also setting up the Wellspring Centre in Ashburton. She encouraged me to engage in training as a spiritual director, move from Baptist ministry into being part of the Wellspring Centre team as director of Wellspring, which was a program that both focused on training spiritual directors, but also running retreat programs, meditation groups, workshops around exploring our spiritual journey or the inner work that is needed for us to become aware of what are the influences in our lived experience. And I did a PhD looking at how we train or form spiritual directors within a learning context. I completed that in 2017, and I've continued to run formation programs in spiritual direction, in the art of contemplative practice, which is a process of developing practices that help us deepen our awareness of who we are and our context, our engagement with others, and our engagement with the world and the transcendent. I also trained in the Enneagram back in the early 2000s, and in the last 20 years have been running workshops in the Enneagram as well, which is a personality system that helps us become aware of what are the patterns in our life that contribute to the habits, the habitual responses we have in life.
That is quite a leap, Peter, from fitting and turning to helping to form others as spiritual directors. Quite a leap from the physical and mechanical to the workings of the mind and the spirit and the directions that we take in our lives.
Both have the same theme of formation.
They do. They do.
I started off forming bits of metal into strange things and then helping shape people.
I might need to come to you a bit later, Peter, for some help with some of my DIY projects. Peter, we've been talking in this current series of podcasts about workplace health, workplace dysfunction and toxicity. And one of my goals is to equip people with tools for not just surviving, but living well in the workplace and building a healthy work community. And of course, one of the ways that we can do that is to keep up with our own inner work. So this phrase, inner work, what does that mean?
Yeah, it's an interesting term that has developed out of several traditions. Part of the struggle we have within our lived experience is that we've been shaped, we've been formed by the context we've grown up in, both family, school, college, work, all have shaped us, but they've oftentimes shaped us through situations of challenge, sometimes of abuse, sometimes of just entrenched cultural patterning, which mean that we have tended to lock into habitual responses to things because we've found them safe and because other people like us when we do that. Now, when we're not aware of those things, those influences that have shaped us, what happens is we just tend to go with the flow of what is easiest for us. The thing is, oftentimes that's not the most helpful for us. In fact, oftentimes it limits us to the expectations of others and our own expectations of ourselves. And so what inner work is really about is pushing against the habits that have formed in us and against the echoing voices that are there in our minds that actually shape these habits. And so inner work in pushing against that involves a whole range of different avenues we can do that. For me, the first key one is starting to hone our awareness of these influences that have shaped our lived experience. What we're not aware of controls us.
It's interesting when you go into situations of tension at home or in the workplace, and there can just be this sense of, oh, here we go again. We're following the same old pattern, the same old script, the same old argument. There's a predictability, a tedium about it. And it's very easy to think, oh, why do they always do that? Why do they always push my buttons and respond in that same way? Don't they get that I need something different? But I guess what you're saying is that I can be the one to make the change.
Yes, yeah, but oftentimes what we think is involved in the change is us finding a solution. So how can I change them?
Yes, putty in my hands.
How can I change myself so that I don't react that way? In some senses, that's where those who've studied psychology and counselling can be really helpful, because they've identified patterning and can give us strategies to respond. But there is another way of also addressing these situations, and that is this avenue of honing awareness. As soon as we start recognising, oh, it's happening again, and can stop and say, oh, I'm noticing it's happening again, that can be the start of a whole shift in the influence of that situation on us. What tends to happen when we haven't done the work of honing awareness is we say, oh, it's happening again. Oh, okay, I've got to go into my rescuing or safety mode. And I slip into my habitual mode. Okay, it's happening again. Okay, I'll go to my room and sit quietly, hide from it. Or I'll attack them and challenge them. And those patterns just keep reinforcing these habits that actually lock us down. As I can hone my awareness that this is happening, it may not be that I have an immediate strategy for responding to it, But I now start being aware of the influence that is shaping my responses to what's happening.
So you can start to see what's pushing your own buttons. Mm-hmm. And that gives cause to consider how you can change your part of the script. Mm. Once we become aware, what are some of the options available to us?
There are lots of practices, but before I get to that, there are a couple of steps in this honing awareness that is worth just touching on at this initial stage. When I start honing awareness, when I start saying, oh, this is happening again, let me stop and notice it. The second step in that is what a lot of scholars today and traditionally through the centuries have called, we need to become present to ourselves. And this being present to ourselves means I need to look at myself not as a problem, but as a person who's being influenced by these situations, which means I need to start seeing myself in a way that has compassion on myself and not just sympathy for myself.
Mm. What's the difference between compassion and sympathy? I'm not known for either, Peter.
Compassion is where I actually feel for myself, not just get caught in poor me sort of attitude. Sympathy tends to take on that, you know, I'm the victim here, and it tends to take on labelling. Whereas compassion, it's about looking at the other and looking at myself as a you rather than an it. Rather than seeing myself just as an object or seeing the other as an object, it's actually seeing us as people who are connected, situations that are connected.
Relational beings.
Very much so. Mm.
Mm. Where, and when you have relational beings, not inanimate objects, there's an unpredictability to that, isn't there? And there a is. Permission to depart from the script, to change from the script, to yes. change the rules of engagement,
yes.
and come up with something a little bit more growy or healthy as yes. a result.
Yes. It starts then inviting us to notice what these connections are actually promoting in us and in the other.
Mm.
And when I can come at that compassionately, I may start noticing that some of the things, some of the connections between me and myself or me and the other are things that actually devalue me or take energy from me or make me feel less of a person.
So we could actually be doing self-harm by following some of those scripts
yes.
that we've just learnt and haven't questioned.
Yes.
Mm.
And that's where this third element, I think, of inner work comes in, where it's as I become present to myself and as I become present to the other, it is noticing what are the things that block life in me or inhibit life in me. And what are the things that bring me alive?
The language from the decluttering world is about what sparks joy. I love that yes. phrase.
Yes.
Yep. So we may look at the stuff around our house and say, well, what sparks joy and what can I get rid of?
Yes.
And you're suggesting that we can do that same thing in our inner work. We can say, yes. what are the events? What are the people? What are the relationships? What are the tasks that I do that spark joy? And yes. what actually comes at me like a Dementor out of Harry Potter yes. and sucks all the joy out of life?
Yes.
These are big questions.
They are. They are. And that's why it's called inner work.
Not inner play.
Yes. We hope that it takes us to inner play.
Yeah. Okay.
Because once I actually have the boundaries, you know, that as it were, the cell-like walls dismantled, I actually find that there is a lot more room to play.
Once you escape from behind. Sorry?
To be who I am in a more holistic sense rather than in this very controlled, limited, oftentimes habitual sense.
A locked up life. So we've... So that those are the three sort of steps to doing inner work. Yep.
Yeah.
And I should just, yeah. So the first thing is to stop and notice.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is to become present to ourselves. And the third thing, to identify what sparks joy and what is life denying.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So what are some of the ways that we can actually get to that point and do this inner work? Well, what are the vehicles available to us?
Well, in some senses, they're limitless, but in others, I found in working with people that there are different practices that work for different people.
Is that about personality?
I think it is about personality. I think as I've worked with the Enneagram, I've noticed that particular personalities are drawn to particular practices.
Tell me about that. I'm intrigued. I'm a 7 on the Enneagram, Peter. You know, more is better. Let's play.
Yes. It's really about finding the practices that work for us. It's like, you know, when you go to a gym and they say, look, what you need to do is you need to run and jump and skip and do it, you know, and you find, you know, you try and follow the regime that they give you, and you find after a couple of weeks you want to give up, you know, you start finding excuses for why you can't do the run around the block or whatever. And for me, it's a similar proposition in terms of inner work. You know, if in physical exercise we find there are some exercise things that I enjoy doing, you know, I enjoy going out and playing golf. So rather than me saying, okay, well, it's something I enjoy to do, I need to do something that I hate doing because that'll be better for me. It's better to do more of what I enjoy doing that actually gives me the exercise I need rather than doing something that doesn't work for me. And it's the same with this inner work stuff. And different people have found different practices helpful, and others, it just doesn't work for them. So things, you know, there are simple things in terms of honing awareness, things like journaling. Now, for some people, that really works and is a really good way to do it. You know, there have been books put out that have been really helpful. The book The Artist's Way talks about just waking up each morning and just start writing without thinking about what you're writing.
I did The Artist's Way, Peter, when my kids were little. And for me, it's a 12-week process that I managed to do over 16 weeks, writing morning pages with that stream of consciousness writing, yes. 3 pages of stream of consciousness first thing in the morning. My daughter, who's an early riser, had the top bunk.
Yes.
And when she was out of bed, I would go up into the nest in the top bunk and do my 3 pages of stream of consciousness when the kids had left the room, or go out the back on the porch swing. And it's a curious process to just write, not in a structured way, but 3 pages of stream of consciousness blather, really.
Yes.
I mean, reading back over it, unbelievably tedious.
Yes.
But the things that it frees within you or gives you permission to explore in those pages if you want to.
Yes.
Quite a curious process. And I liked the fact that it was structured with different questions to ponder each week.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's even as an extrovert, I found that a useful thing to sort of sit and do private writing.
Yeah. And for those that aren't into writing, I mean, you can do a similar thing in what the old Christian religious tradition called awareness examine, which is just a process of, at the end of the day, probably as you lie in bed before you go to sleep, just to rescan the day. And in rescanning the day, what you're invited to do is to notice what are the parts of the day that have stayed with you. And what of those parts of the day have been life-giving for you? And what of those parts of the day have been de-energizing for you? And again, it's not then sitting down and mulling over, well, how can I fix that? It's just holding that awareness. As I reflect on my day yesterday, it might be I recall just running into a guy on the street who came up to me and noticed something that was happening to me that seemed similar to what he was experiencing and wanted to know what it was about. Now, it was just a complete stranger, but that stayed with me, that memory. And it was like, okay, so someone noticed what was happening in me. So someone saw me. Oh, what did that feel like? Oh, that felt good that someone noticed me. Okay.
That you're not anonymous.
Yes. Yeah. Or someone, I was walking past, smiled at me, although we don't see many smiles these days because they're all behind the masks. But even noticing little gestures that have stayed with us from the day, not necessarily as we see them, but as we reflect on them, to notice those things that have stayed with us, starts honing that awareness. So the next day I go out and I'm a little more aware of what I'm experiencing in the moment.
Helps you be more present to people and the events that are happening.
Yes. Which is that second step that we talked about.
And is that about learning to process life as you go rather than stockpile unfinished business?
Yes. Yes. This is what Eckhart Tolle talks about as, the power of now. It is actually being able to bring our attention to what we are experiencing now rather than reacting to what we experience now and, as you say, stockpiling it our memories of things that contribute to our fear of life or whatever.
So what's the difference between that and mindfulness? So we're being encouraged to go and try mindfulness or do 10 minutes of mindfulness or, mindfulness practices. Is there a difference?
Well, no. From what I understand of mindfulness, and it's a term that is bandied around far more frequently now, and I think it's got some good conceptual foundations to it. Mindfulness is about filling your mind, but not with all the things that you've collected, but actually filling your mind with the present moment.
So trying to weed out the mental clutter.
Yes.
The distractions, the patterns, the problems to be solved.
Yes.
And pay attention to what's happening right
now. What is. Yes.
You said that different personality types are more drawn to some methods than others. So some of the things that we've talked about are private ways of processing or doing inner work. What about the energizer bunnies? What about those who just need to do something with other people all the time?
Yes.
What are the options there for doing inner work?
Yeah. Again, possibilities are wide. Within some of the different religious traditions, practices like pilgrimage or walking meditation are ways in which some people have engaged in activity-based reflection, where you're actually doing something, but as you're doing it, you're noticing what is the effect of what you are doing on you. Now, that can be applied, I think, in a whole broad range of situations. If an extrovert like yourself engages in an activity, but comes at the activity in terms of, look, I'm going to actually reflect on what I'm doing here. You might say, well, I love going down the pub and catching up with friends, to be able to go, and instead of just going and saying, oh, well, this is what I always do, you know, oh, yeah, here's Fred, here's Joe. Yeah, they're going to tell the story about it, you know, and do that habitual, you know, tape playing in our heads, actually come at it and say, okay, I'm going to go down the pub, you know, today, this time I'm going to go down aware. What's happening to me as I come in? What am I noticing happens when I see my friends? Oh, I see the energy rise in me. Oh, okay. That's good to notice that. I sit down and Joe starts telling a story and, you know, he starts putting down someone. And I say, oh, what am I aware of as Joe's telling his story? Oh, I'm feeling like the energy's draining out of me. Oh, that's a bit different. If I can start being conscious, bring awareness to not just, you know, some of the practices are about withdrawing, you know, like retreats, and they're growing in popularity both in business and in the general population, you know, the use of retreats, which are ways of coming away from the distractions in life and actually just focusing on what's happening in me in a context that I'm not familiar with. So, you know, they're both activities, active ways of engaging with the world. Some people are drawn to retreats, and I run silent retreats where people come and they're completely silent for 2 days. And yeah, sometimes the extroverts come out of that saying, you know, why couldn't we at least have talked over the meal? But oftentimes they also come away and say, but actually I got in touch with something in myself that I didn't realize was there, something that I really do value and notice in myself. So there are a whole lot of different ways. Some use meditation. Meditation is a lovely way, particularly in groups. I find it more beneficial and more in line with my personality to do meditation in groups if I get the opportunity to. Whereas meditation on my own, I tend to not be able to hold the space as I need to. So it's finding the practice that actually works for us. And again, it's being aware of, when I do a practice, what's helpful in this for me? Or is there another practice that is more helpful for me?
One of the things that I encountered when doing some pastoral care training in my 20s, and then again when I was doing my orientation and mobility training, is the business of writing a verbatim. Yes. To bring for discussion, yeah, during the group process. It's something about, you know, writing like a script of a play, the record. Yes. Of a conversation that I've had with someone, and bringing that for my own reflection and critical evaluation of others. Is that something that you do in your formation of spiritual directors?
Yes, that's the central exercise that we use in honing awareness of what happens in our interactions within professional situations.
I'm very familiar with processing things on the fly and engaging with people in situations while also almost looking in on it from outside to consider what's happening and examine the quality of relationships and what it's doing to me. As a kinesthetic learner, someone says, oh, have you tried meditation, Lil? I would rather go to bed and have a good sleep, because that's what happens if I have to sit still. But I can find the stillness for meditation in walking or rocking on the porch swing or working in the garden. The physicality of getting dirt under my fingernails and heaving things into the barrow or willfully destroying something that needs hacking down, my mind is free to roam during that. Yes. Process and to simmer on conversations that I've had. There's stuff that's not yet resolved, then the physicality of that garden time can actually help me do the inner work in my mind.
Yes. Yeah. The other point that comes out of, again, coming back to this concept of inner work, is it's not necessarily easy.
No, it's confronting because it often leads to more work.
Yes.
It leads to more work. It leads to making conscious changes to the way that we engage with people and do things. And we talked with Bruce, an organisational consultant, a few weeks ago about that shift from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence, then conscious competence, where you have to concentrate quite hard at learning a new skill before that becomes automated in unconscious competence. And there's a bit of a threatening space there in the middle.
Yes.
Where doing inner work doesn't necessarily feel safe. It feels like you're stepping out into unknown territory, and this introspection can be incredibly threatening. Yes. What do you think are the things that can help to make it safe to do inner work?
One of the traditional practices or avenues that people have found to do inner work safely is to have someone companion them in the process of doing that inner work. And that's where the centuries old practice of spiritual direction, or what we're now preferring to call spiritual companioning, has evolved and emerged as a key process through which people can do inner work with a companion. That is, with someone who can hold the space safely for them to go and start exploring some of these deeper inner parts of their lived experience that actually have shaped and fixed the habitual responses to life, you know?
Mm.
So it's like having someone, you know, like the business consultant you were talking to previously, someone who accompanies you through the process of doing the work, of not avoiding particular parts because they are uncomfortable, but actually who will sit with us as we look at those uncomfortable parts in a safe way. You know, someone who you can tell your story to about your everyday lived experience, not about anything super religious or anything. It's about your everyday lived experience. And that person invites you to notice, to develop that awareness of what is actually happening there for you.
So what's the difference between spiritual direction and having a mentor or going for counselling, say?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, counsellors, psychologists, mentors are trained around strategic change. You know, their training is to pick up patterns in our lived experience and say, look, here are some clues as to how we can counter those patterns. So they're more strategic.
And coaches, I suppose.
Yeah. So coaches are oftentimes people that have done the work before and have picked up the clues as to how we can be more effective in what we do.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
Spiritual companioning is a process of honing awareness. So it is primarily focused around this development of awareness and becoming present to ourselves and noticing what are the blocks and the catalysts that will then hopefully give us clues within ourselves to discern the strategies that we need to take on to respond to these situations. Because oftentimes we actually know deep down what we need. We actually have a knowing within ourselves that has been shaped by our lived experience. But oftentimes we've turned that off because it seems too difficult for us to hold that knowing. So we slip back into habitual patterns that we know seem to work in particular situations. And what this honing of the awareness is doing is trying to help people, with someone companioning them, to go to these more challenging, oftentimes more sensitive, more vulnerable places to actually notice what are the influences that are behind our patterns of response.
We need to do our own inner work as individuals. But in order to create a healthy, forward-moving organisation, we need to do that inner work as an organisation too.
Yes. And in fact, there is a group of business consultants who have developed a model. They're a team connected with Peter Senge, the guy who wrote The Fifth Dimension of Business Management. The theory that they've developed that I think is based in spiritual awareness and principles is what's called Theory U. And Theory U has at its heart this processing of what have been the voices that have shaped the shape of a business, that have closed the thinking of the business down to just be seen as a particular mindset.
Mm.
And so they encourage people in business to come together and open their hearts, open their emotional agenda enough to be able to let go of our commitment or attachment to particular aspects of the business. They say when we can go through that process of opening our minds, opening our hearts and opening our wills, we need to enter into presencing. And you see this word presence comes up again. Getting in touch with the source, whether it's the source of life or, you know, as religious traditions would call it, God or whatever the source is that gives us a holistic vision, not limited by our history, we can then look at business now with truly open minds, open hearts and open wills to look at what the future is inviting us into.
If someone's interested in trying to find a spiritual director, Peter, yes, how do they go about it?
One, Google it, and there'll be centres that will come up in each state in Australia, but also around the world, not just based within a particular faith tradition. The most widespread database for spiritual direction is Spiritual Directors International, have a what they call a seek and find guide, where you can put in your location and they will give you a list of people in your location that could be available as spiritual directors. In Australia, there are in each state organisations that train spiritual directors and have lists of people available. Google Wellspring Centre, it should come up as one of the top picks. We have people that will interview you and link you up with a spiritual director that reflects your desires and needs.
A bit like matching a guide dog with a client who needs to learn some more mobility skills.
Exactly.
Does it take a few takes sometimes to get the right match? Yeah.
We're very strong on people feeling at ease with the people that they work with, both ways. So sometimes the match doesn't work and we say, that's good, let's find one that does.
How does it typically work out? Once a month? Is it a long-term commitment?
It's up to the person. So it's not about problem solving. It's about honing awareness. So I have people that have journeyed with me regularly for 20 years once a month, but others who will journey with me for 3 months, then come back 6 months later and say, oh, can I check in again? I'm now aware there's another stage in my life I need to work through. So it's very flexible.
I worked effectively with a spiritual director for about 6 years, but I've also had, you know, one or two meetings with a number of others, and it just was apparent that that relationship wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
It feels important to me to have the right fit and someone who exactly will push me to stretch.
Yes.
And become aware of things that were previously very, very scary for me, but I don't want so much challenge that I just feel crippled by it.
Exactly.
And I don't want to feel like I'm already venturing into places and have left the spiritual director way behind as well.
Yes.
not helpful. I think another notion that I'm aware of in terms of reflective practice is the notion of a year of discernment. And of course, in doing this inner work, sometimes there's a crisis point that touches the need to find someone to help out. And it feels like a bit of an emergency. And we've been talking about feeling like you're between a rock and a hard place at work. If that feels like a crisis, it's really important to have crisis response. But if you're aware that things aren't percolating along very nicely and you're needing to make some change, I think that the notion of a year of discernment is a really useful thing. It's not about saying we need to fix it now.
No.
And it's not about letting an unhealthy situation dribble on for years. It's about saying, I will define 12 months, choose a companion, meet with them regularly, and come to a decision at the end of that time.
Yes.
Considering all angles. Have you seen this be a healthy process for people?
Yeah. There's been several processes that are along those lines. A year of discernment is one. Another is what at Wellspring we call contemplative circles. It's similar to what Parker Palmer in the States, who works with teachers, calls circles of trust. And that is getting a group of people that you know well, or you know you enough to sit with you for a few sessions. You put out the situation that you're trying to process to them, and they are just invited to ask questions of you to deepen your awareness of the different factors that are influencing the decision that you make. Again, Wellspring has a group that meet regularly in that vein as well, called Contemplative Circles. And you can just join that group and be a member of it, and they operate as a circle, a companioning circle of people who are willing to work with you in that discernment process.
A little bit like joining a writing group if you're trying to write a novel, or joining the men's shed if you're trying to pick up some DIY skills. Exactly. So it's about having communities of practice, and you don't have to be an expert to join.
No.
You join so that you can learn some skills and become more insightful amongst a community of like-minded people.
There are courses, as we mentioned earlier, there's an Enneagram course that will be available over 8 weeks next year. And we've got Art of Contemplative Practice courses, which look at different practices that we can use to hone our awareness in life. They're through Wellspring. There are other programs through centres like the Heart of Life Centre, the Living Well Centre also run program. The Jesuits have a program that's going to be running through the Australian Catholic University. So there is a range of programs that are centred around these practices and doing inner work.
Thanks, Peter, for taking us on a bit of a guided tour of this place that can be a bit of a scary place if people have grown up in a family context which doesn't promote self-examination.
Yes.
But it's a place that it's good for us to go so that we have a greater sense of ownership of our own business, our own work, and the influence that we have on others.
Yes.
Thanks for today, Peter.
No worries. See you later.
That was Peter Bentley, Spiritual Director and Enneagram Teacher. You can find a summary of our conversation in the PowerPoint on my website, www.lildeverell.net/resources. Of course, as a 7 on the Enneagram with a fear of missing out, I've tried lots of ways of doing inner work. When I accidentally found myself on a silent retreat, I managed to zip my lips for 24 hours before breaking out and needing to find someone to natter with. There are places you go in that kind of profound silence that I've never encountered anywhere else. Then when I tried the artist's way, I knew it's meant to release the artistic child within, Well, my artistic child has never been locked up, but writing morning pages made me start doing housework and spending money differently. I realised that my frugal habits that mean I can save money easily were making me emotionally stingy, and I needed to practice loving people much more abundantly. You might need to start this work in a safe, private place. But ultimately, inner work can take us on a grand adventure, and we can do this work as we keep roaming.